Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Defense Deconstructed on the CGAI Podcast Network. I'm your host and Vice President of the Canadian Global Affairs Institute, Dave Perry. On today's show, which we're recording November 13th, 2020, we're talking about data and digitization in the Canadian Armed Forces with the Vice Chief of the Defense Staff, Lieutenant General Mike Rouleau.
So, General Rouleau, thanks very much for joining us today. To start us off at a high level, so you've worked on some previous transformation initiatives. Several of those in the last kind of decade or two have looked at aspects of modernizing the business practices at national defense, including digitization, focusing on different ways to handle data. So where do you see what you're talking about now in this respect, kind of fitting into the past trajectory from a broad sense, and how do you want to take those initiatives forward?
So thanks, David. Thanks for the question. Thanks for having me. And I think this is a time well spent by any VCDS connecting with stakeholders out there. You know, I'm not here to sort of comment too much on previous transformation initiatives, but suffice it to say that a lot of them tended to focus more on the structural aspects of the business. What we're proposing this time around, and I think we're proposing it because it in some ways represents an existential threat to the armed forces, our lack of data and digitalization. And I say that because not only are the adversaries sort of ramping up their game in this sense, but our allies are too. And so it's existential from the perspective that if we don't maintain robust interoperability with key allies like the United States, the UK, Australia, to name just a few, our status as a high-tiered military force is going to suffer. So this initiative is very much a dedicated sort of top-down driven exercise where the leadership of the armed forces and the Department of National Defense is decisively engaged. And we're ensuring that the foundational aspects of our business are going to be concretized such that we can pivot moving forward in the future. So I'm not going to say that it's the only one of its kind, but I am going to say that it is a significant initiative to make sure that we start to understand and leverage the power of data and that we truly digitalize the force to connect it in ways that it's never been connected in the past.
So if you're thinking about this as being kind of on a broader scale where it's got a concrete impact on how Canada can operate with allies and be part of a wider coalition force, I guess, could you maybe situate how you're thinking about this in terms of what I've heard you discuss elsewhere as a portfolio of defense investment, the portfolio approach that you want to take with the defense service program writ large? How do you see this fitting in against the other kind of more traditional capabilities as well as other emerging ones in terms of how the forces and the CAP and the department are going to make these types of investments? So how do you balance out these different aspects that all involve people, finite resources, and get the right kind of mix?
Yeah, I mean, there's a whole lot in that question, but like fundamentally, as the senior designated officer responsible to push through the Defense Services Program, I mean, that's what vice chiefs of the defense staff do. You know, it falls to me to make sure that we're maximizing the benefit of the $24-ish billion that we get every year. We're not going to remake the way that we acquire capabilities. That's not a thing. I mean, we have the system we have, and we're going to operate within that. We will endeavor to shape the system such that we can sort of tailor what we need as much as possible. But the bottom line is, in the past, we've tended to buy things. We've tended to acquire capabilities and view them as objects. Since becoming the vice chief in the summer, I made it very clear that there's two words that are going to really sort of signify the time that me and my team will spend here. And they are discipline, number one, and integration, number two. Discipline in the sense that we have to live within our means. And strong, secure, engaged is a very robust defense policy. And it provides for a lot of things like concurrency, but it also provides a pot of money. And so we have to reconcile those two things and make sure that we're trying to achieve as much of the former within the means of the latter. So, you know, to the extent that the vice's shop sort of tailors the climate and the culture of what we do, we're going to take a more portfolio view of our business. We're going to focus less on the thing we're trying to buy, and we're going to pull to the left aspects associated with the thing, which I might be speaking in terms of infrastructure, people, sustainment concepts, IMIT. We're going to pull those tertiary things that were by and large considered as afterthoughts to the thing we were acquiring. We're going to pull those further to the left in the process to make sure that we're requiring an ecosystem around that capability and an ecosystem that can connect within the wider system of systems. So we're going to be focused on outcomes of what we're trying to acquire. We're going to try to put teams that are more integrated together. We're going to try to militate for delegations of authority to push more power to the edge as a function of increased agility. We're going to make sure that our requirements are as simple as they can be, with integration being one of the foremost high-level mandatory requirements out there. And we're going to try to make them as descriptive as possible, because when you start writing requirements that are exceptionally proscriptive, this is where we tend to get into trouble. And so there's nothing revolutionary about what we're talking about, but we are talking about just being more alive to the fact that more than ever before, the systems that we're acquiring need to communicate with each other. If we want to have success in the battle space in the future, in this pan-domain reality, as we call it, well, pan-domain threats, which really mean that the adversary is going to try to saturate us with friction across the air, land, maritime, space, cyber, informational domains. Pan-domain threats mean you have to have a pan-domain force. You have to have pan-domain situational awareness and situational understanding. That is the force that we're going to move to try to acquire as best we can, David.
So again, if you're thinking about kind of the portfolio of investments that you could possibly make within the envelope that you have to work in, you've got a number of different projects that are kind of midway through right now that are working either to have points of connectivity and points of data transference that are underway. You've got some modernization of existing systems. So the DRMIS modernization has been undergoing on the way for a while. You've also got planned investments that kind of haven't come online yet, but will in the near or medium term. And then you have a bunch of other capabilities where we've refreshed and invested and updated those in the past decade or two decades. So they're likely not going to be back into an investment cycle for a while. So as you're thinking about this rolling forward, is the effort to try and, I guess, tagging on from what you said before, to try and leverage future investment to make sure you're maximizing on that, or are you going to have a trying to balance holistically or in any particular way? What should people think about when you're in this space? Is it a go forward agenda or one where you're going to try and integrate both the present as well as the past and the future?
Yeah, okay. It's early days. And so, you know, we haven't quite fleshed out the details of the plan. I would say for the most part, clearly the pieces that are moving forward, the pieces that have yet to say move into the definition space, they will be directly impacted by this. You know, we're already making some decisions. At a program management board a couple of weeks ago, we said no to a potential investment that wasn't in the data or digitalization space, but we said no to that investment because everything we can save, we can put towards the data digitalization effort. You know, this is not a fixed budget approach in the sense that we're going to say 10% of every project will be dedicated to making sure that we stitch it together. It's more organic than that. What I am saying to people is, if it means that we can buy one less thing to pay for the integration of a particular asset, then that's what we'll do, because we're not just going to buy a maximized number of assets that are not connected to connect them later. I think historically in the armed forces, we've been a little bit more seduced by the sensor, if you will, than the back end processing, exploitation, and dissemination thing that makes value of what the sensor is seeing. You know, so we're going to pay, again, more attention to the end-to-end system that ensures that whatever we're acquiring can speak to sister systems, can speak to command and control architectures. You mentioned in your question the issue of DRMIS modernization. Maybe I'll just comment on that for a second. So DRBM, which is the Defense Resource Business Management, the mothership program, if you will, under DRBM is DRMIS modernization. DRMIS modernization is very much the engine of the system of record, if you will, this financial, materiel, infrastructure, support system of record that will migrate to a new system, S/4HANA, in about the mid-20s. And this is very much the engine of the foundational digitalization of our armed forces and our department. This is the first deliberate L0-led institutional effort in this space that we'll have undertaken in probably, since DRMIS when it came out, certainly since then. It's going to feature aspects of data security along functional capability lines. But fundamentally, David, what this is a cultural shift. It's not, you know, we would fail if we just saw this as a technology piece that we were going to overlay on extant processes. What we need to do is to understand the technology, what it can do to refine our processes, how we can work with the technology to be both more efficient and more effective, not simply buying a black box and layering it on top of what we're doing. So DRMIS modernization is going to be right at the heart of this. So, you know, to sum up, I mean, clearly the new capabilities that we're acquiring are going to be subjected to this integration demand. We are looking retrospectively to see if there are things that we need to stitch up that are already legacy capabilities in the force, but it's a big undertaking. Like, let me just give you an example. We have about 200 projects right now that are in project management pipeline that all relate to C4ISR, but we don't have an agreed upon C4ISR backbone. What we've been doing is buying systems and then patching them into what passes for our backbone. This has to stop. We have to architect a properly agreed upon C4I backbone and make sure that going forward, all of our systems are connecting into it. So this is just one example. It's a daunting task. It's a big task. We need to eat the elephant one bite at a time. And, you know, we're off and running now. Like, we have begun this journey.
Listening to an episode of Defense Deconstructed on the CGAI Podcast Network. These engaging conversations from the front lines of policy and politics are brought to you by the Canadian Association of Defense and Security Industries.
So to push a little further on the architecture piece, because so you've talked about kind of trying to create effectively an ecosystem where you've got the different investments, the different priorities that are rolling forward, being able to fit within a wider system of systems approach. So do you have some preliminary thoughts about what is the right way to shape that to achieve what you're talking about? So how do the various pieces of data and their handling have to knit together? How do you ensure things like data sovereignty? If you do move to something like a cloud-based storage system, as an example, and that a lot of the potential contenders for those are offshore, do you have thoughts about how you retain the ability for our existing or future investments in Canada, a lot of which are now coming for lots of good reasons with small, medium enterprise Canadian companies investing in their technology that would then have to fit into those systems? So maintaining that connectivity and retaining sovereignty would be at least, I guess, a couple pieces of that. Any thoughts about how you create this in a way or try and shape it from your role where you can ensure those different pieces are held to?
Yeah, so I find myself at this interesting position as the vice chief where I'm like the definition of a technological immigrant who finds himself virtually at the top of the, you know, military hierarchy where I make decisions. So it's a real fascinating space because I've never pretended to be any kind of technological, you know, smart person at all. When I came in as the vice chief, I gave four articulated capability priorities that I wanted the team to center on. First was data and digitalization. The second was C4I spine. The third was supply chain and sustainment. And the fourth was professional military education, this cognitive teaching that sort of underpins everything that we do. To the issue of data and data sovereignty, you know, we know that data is a strategic asset that we need to operationalize. We understand that data can give us operational advantage, and we understand that data can also give us a business efficiency and effectiveness that, you know, we can't do without moving forward. I sat with ADM, DIA a number of times in the last couple of weeks. You know, it will be his job to ensure that we have the right architecture, the right standards, the right governance, and the right talent and culture around data. But fundamentally, what we need to do for someone like me, who's worried about the entire enterprise with an eye to armed forces, ultimately our core output, armed forces effectiveness, but also to the business side and my equities to the deputy minister, we have to make data visible. We have to make it accessible. It has to be understandable, trustworthy, linked, transferable. And we've got to be careful that we're not, you know, playing to the highest common denominator. If 3% of our network activity occurs in the secret or top secret space, we have to be careful that we're not architecting systems that are overly exquisite for that 3%. We have to stay focused on the 97% and make sure that our data is consumable by us, safeguarded as a Canadian equity where necessary, but highly transferable with allies and partners wherever possible. So I think balance is going to come into play here. You know, exactly how all of this is going to fall out is going to be the subject of the work that we're doing in DRBM, DRMIS modernization, and other work. But it all fundamentally connects at some point. You know, we can't talk about having a C4ISR backbone if we're not talking about what the data standards are going to be. And so the call to arms around integration is really a function of necessity moving forward.
So you flagged a couple of minutes ago the fact that this is going to in part involve a cultural change. Do you have some initial thoughts? Obviously, what you can do in your role and through the governance bodies is try and drive things top down, but more broadly in terms of trying to get folks oriented around this. So if you think of trying to shape, make a core of the CAF a focus on integration, are there particular ways that you think that you can help drive that?
Yeah, I mean, there are ways that I have to contribute to driving it. I think the first one, David, is it's got to be leadership led. I mean, at the core of it, the chief of the defense staff and the deputy minister have to be the ones ultimately who are leading this. Myself and Claude Rochette, the associate deputy minister, have agreed that we're going to be as one, the two of us moving this together from the level 0.5. So we've already started providing some of that leadership and guidance out there. You know, up until this point, it was very much a level one to level one activity, you know, a service going to see ADM DIA and saying, hey, I've got a great value case. While that's okay, we need to have a top-down framework around this, top-down objectives mapped against the calendar that we need to achieve, risks that we're prepared to accept at the very highest levels, that sort of thing. So leadership is one. The second thing that I mentioned to the chief again just earlier today is three-star engagement. You know, we traditionally grow our senior leaders more in the force generation, force employment domains. And so at some level, we're less comfortable in the force management, the force sustainment, the force development domains. Well, that's not good enough. Moving forward, our responsibility as stewards of the profession of arms demands that we lead in the program side as well. It demands that we engage. We cannot simply leave this to our majors and lieutenant colonels to try to figure out, because we're talking fundamentally about a business transformation. And you can't have business transformation, and if you've got majors and lieutenant colonels, bright though they are not the ones who can talk about what we're going to fundamentally change in terms of our processes. So leaders have to define from the very top what it is that they want to get out of a data and digitalized space, how they want to consume their information, and the top of that pyramid is going to inform the rest of it. Three stars, two stars, we need to get to the table and have these discussions and communicate amongst ourselves. And the other thing I would say is we've got to be resilient as an organization. You know, you can't innovate, you can't make the kind of progress we're talking about if you're not resilient enough to absorb the inevitable, you know, failures that we're going to experience along the way. You can't innovate if you don't want failure. I mean, failure is part of innovation. So culturally, we've got to adapt our mindset a little bit as a bureaucracy, if you will, military and civilian bureaucracy. And we have to see this in terms of partnership, not ownership. This is such an integrated undertaking that if we're too focused on equities, my sandbox, not yours, we're not going to get where we need to go. So partnership is the order of the day. And we have to sort of distribute trust. Trust has to truly be at the foundation of the work we're going to do together. We have to speak clearly to each other. We have to over-communicate clearly to each other. Friction produces better results, and so we're going to have some difficult conversations as we try to converge the entire organization around this idea of leveraging data and being more digital.
Okay, so I think that's a great high-level overview of where your headspace is at.
Thanks for tuning into this week's episode of Defense Deconstructed, part of the CGAI Podcast Network. If you like the show, please remember to rate us and leave a comment on your podcast app. And if you like our stuff, please feel free to check out our donation page at cgai.ca/support. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. The podcast is brought to you by our team in Ottawa, and thanks go to our producer, Charlotte Duval-Antoine, and Drew Phillips for providing our music. I'm Dave Perry, and thanks for listening to this episode of Defense Deconstructed.